Okay, let's get going today. Thanks for coming. I just want to remind everybody to sign up. And somebody's taken the community sign up list. But there is a couple handouts, so be sure you get that. Everybody can fill out this questionnaire and an evaluation sheet. Any questions from last week? Anything on your mind at all? If there's any topic that you might want me to address, please let me know and I'll research it and do my best to come up with some discussion items. Okay. Couple issues about projects for people working on projects. I want to tell you about a couple hazards. If you're working with other people, you have to realize that other people are not working on your schedule. So just because you have to have things done at a certain time, they probably don't care. Or maybe they do care, but they're busy. So don't The point is, don't rely on a single individual because they might be sick, they might be going on vacation, they may be going out of the country, they may be busy and can't work with you for a while. So have several people that you can work with. As far as contacts, you know, some people are just hard to get a hold of. Some people don't respond well to email, so you have to consider that as well. If you're working on a project that you need to get parts for, you need to order those early because it does take time. Sometimes the places are out of stock. You might have to look for a second supplier. And the other thing about parts is if you're buying something that's going to be important and if it breaks, you're going to be out of luck, I suggest you consider buying two of them, having a spare, just in case. Because, at the last minute something breaks, if you have a second one on hand, that's going to work out fine. So I want to thank everybody for sending me updates, and there's a few people who haven't sent me updates, but continue to do so. I don't need anything long. I just want to know that you're working, making progress, and if you can send some photos along with your updates, that gives me a good visualization about what you're doing. Room 36, those people who have applied for room 36 passes, the paperwork has gone through, so Marlo knows who you are, so the first thing you need to do is sign up for a safety orientation, which only takes 15 minutes, and then she can show you around the facility and see, you can see what kind of materials and equipment they have for you to work with. Last Thursday, there was somebody here from the Stanford Daily who wrote an article about our lecture last Thursday. I didn't know about it until Friday, but it is online, and now it's in corrected form. So I won't go through that. So it happens every year that, people, find out about the course and that they publicize it. But today I want to talk about aging and old. And why should we be concerned about aging and getting old? Well, there's a lot of reasons. First of all, as you age, your physical abilities change, you lose some abilities, not quite as speedy as you were when you were young. Your mental function changes, but surprisingly, there was an article on TV that talked about one's concentration peaking at age 45. So students, you have a lot to look forward to. Financial skills peak at 53 and vocabulary peaks in your 60s and 70s. So it isn't all downhill. As you get older, and of course, as you get older, your employment status changes, you're not, maybe not working anymore, you're retired or doing something else. And along with that, your outlook on life changes. You know, maybe when you started working, you know, you're just considering, you know, making money for yourself, and then you get married, and so you're working for two, and then you have a family. And after a while, maybe you're back, you know, just you and your immediate family. You have a different outlook. You don't have, maybe don't have to work as much. Be retired or semi-retired. But importantly, as you get older, your chance for disability and loss of independence and quality of life may decrease because you might have some disease or lose function or have an accident or something like that. So that's why we should be concerned about getting older. So the question is, are you old? Well, you know, aging is a continuum. You age every year, but how do you really know if you're old? And old, being old is a matter of perspective. You know, your older brother is always older than you, and it's always nice to have an older brother or family member because then you can intimidate other people and say, well, you better be nice to me or my older brother or older cousin will come and beat you up. You know, that's how it was, you know, for me. But and, you know, your perception of people change. You know, my parents were old. I never thought I'd be as old as they were. I never thought I'd be as old as my grandparents were. So your perspective, you know, changes as you age. And it changes for each of us differently. So even if you're muscle-bound or athletic, you know, you could lose that muscle tone and stuff. So it's just another example of what aging does to us. So how do you know if you're old? Well, you know, you can be a 40-year-old virgin and be old, okay, you know, from that point of view. You know, there's no magic age that, you know, once you turn a certain age, you're old. It's different for everybody. So you can't just say because you're, you know, 50 or 60 or 65 or whatever, that now you're old. Well, how do you really know if you belong in the old group? So in order to investigate this and explore this a little bit more, I'm going to use the standard teaching technique, you know, the list. So here's 12 signs you may be old, okay? The first one's a little serious. If you may be old if you are no longer able to procreate. Well, that's biology. You know, biology says that at a certain point you can't generate the raw materials you need to be a parent. But it's sort of impractical to test this on a monthly basis, you know. So this is biology saying that you may be old. If you see your childhood toys on Antiques Roadshow, that could be a sign that you're old. And kids of every age, you know, have toys. This wasn't one of my toys, but, you know, I had toys back then, which I don't have now. And toys.
Computer History Museum.
Right. I'll get to that. So if you see your toys on the Antique Roadshow, they may be so old that, you know, you may be considered old as well. But, you know, people's tastes change, and from one generation to the next, every generation has their own toys. What were my toys? You know, I remember having a hula hoop, you know, roller skates, frisbee, you know, bicycle, you know, pretty much the standard stuff. When you talk BS, you're referring to your latest blood sugar reading. And so this, you know, changes in your medical condition. You know, you have to be aware of other things that are happening to your body and monitor them a lot more than you used to. And blood sugar is one of them. You know, there's 25 million people in the U.S. who have diabetes. And so that's a real issue. You have to take better care of yourself. You have to, you know, do things like monitor your blood pressure and stuff like that. So here's a blood glucose meter that says 105 on it. Can somebody tell me if that's a good reading or a bad reading? Students. Any student know?
Pretty good.
It's good? Okay.
Not worry a doctor.
Yeah. that this is a good reading.
When they sound like area codes, did you have a problem?
Yeah.
But a lot of young people may have readings like what you're considering diabetic, so I'm not so sure this is a good criterion.
Well, around 100 is pretty good. It depends on what you're
doing. Sure
what?
I'm not sure that this is a good criterion for being old. There's so many younger people.
Right, young people get it too. So that's why I said you may be old. That isn't inclusive. You wish you were younger. That may be a good sign. Because, you know, when you were a kid, you said, God, I wish I was older, then I could be able to ride a two-wheeler and be able to drive and be able to drink or have fun, go to parties and stuff like that. And, you know, maybe you guys are out of that. But is there anybody who, any student that wishes they were younger? Probably not. But, I mean, I did meet a student once who really said, you know, I wish I was older. And
this is a young lady's profile as well.
That's right. It's both old and young. If you look at it one way, you know, this is the nose and this is the mouth. If you look at it another way, the woman is looking away, and this is her chin and a scarf that she's wearing. So this is both old and young. Okay. So if you wish you were younger, then you know, maybe you're in the old group. Your peers are considered old. So if you hang around with a lot of other people and they're considered old, then, well, you may be old too, okay? So you can identify with who you hang out with, okay? So if you hang out with young people, then you maybe can be younger. Number 7, you are older than the president. Now, somebody told me this a couple years ago, and, you know, I was okay with it when Bush was in office, but, you know, now I'm in the old group now. As of 4 years ago. So, but, you know, the president age changes, and when you get somebody new in there, that you may end up in, find that you're in the old group, as I am for the first time. Number 6, you can find the music you enjoyed when you were growing up in the oldies section. How many people have experienced that? You know, every age has their own music. You know, in my music was, you know, we had Motown in college, you know, rock and roll. We had, I was a little bit beyond Elvis, you know. But a lot of things on here, Peppermint Twist, that was a little bit before my time. But, you know, some of the stuff that I played was my music, classic rock. What?
Peppermint Twist.
I was still a little bit young for that. I was probably in grade school or early high school. Yeah. Okay, number 5. People no longer ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? Instead, they ask you, when are you going to retire and what are you going to do when you retire? And here's Brett Favre saying, retirement, that's easy. I've done it a dozen times. So here's a guy who looks like in really good shape, but he's retired now. So it sort of depends on, you know, what kind of job you have. And certainly, you know, if you find yourself older than any of the athletes out there, then you may be old as well. So I mean, I remember being, you know, talked to as a kid, well, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I'm not sure I had a clue back then, but so things change. Number 4, your drug of choice is vitamin C. Well, it gets back to, you know, your health issues. And sometimes you need to take vitamin supplements or pills or prescriptions and stuff to be healthy, things that you wouldn't have done when you were younger. So, all issues. Number 3, you are cautioned to slow down, not by the highway patrol, but by your doctor. So if your doctor says you better slow down, you know, because you're, you know, abusing your body, for example, then you know you may be old. Okay. Number 2, you are considered distinguished because of your gray hair. So, okay, who knows who this is? Okay, who is it?
Richard.
Right. So I don't think he's particularly old, but he has gray hair. Okay. And the number 1 sign you may be old, you find yourself in a college classroom, not as a student, but as an instructor. So, you know, you don't know where you're going to end up in life. So, but, you know, hopefully you'll find something interesting to do. Elaine.
I have to add a little perspective to this.
Okay.
A few years ago, when my son was
Yep.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you. So here's my observations when I was thinking about this. So as you age, your body changes, and there are advances in technology and stuff and fashion. And they're markers of the passage of time and differentiate us from older folks and younger folks. But, you know, you are a sum of all your experiences and all your memories. That's who you are. And so if a person, you know, wants to know you, they have to know something about, you know, what you've experienced. And you've gone through, you've been a baby, you know, you've done all this stuff, and you're just, you know, who you are, but you've experienced all this stuff in the past. And for those of you who aren't, don't consider yourself in the old group, why were you born so late? Big question. Anyway, I have a questionnaire here that I had a lot of fun coming up with, and I'd like everybody to fill it out and smile when they're doing it. So I'm going to sort of evaluate and do a survey of some of these memories and some of the things that that I went through, and I hope you've gone through too. And I want to see if how well age correlates to these different things. And the things I'm asking, who was president when you born, the media that you enjoyed your music on, and things that you remembered, and wars that you lived through, things that you had, stuff that you watched on television, space-related stuff, and there's a whole mess of computer stuff, you know, about your first computer, had how much memory, what word processor you used, what media you stored your programs on, your printer, your programming experience, and old computers. So it should be a lot of fun, and hopefully I'll have some time to analyze this and report back. So I've got a couple questions that didn't fit into the questionnaire, so this will differentiate the old from the young. The Beatles are, a misspelling of the word Beatles, B-E-E-T-L-A-S, the band Paul McCartney was in before Wings, or Four Mopeds from the UK. Well, it's funny, everybody knows the Beatles, the Fab Four. But, you know, if you're young enough, you maybe don't appreciate the Beatles as much as somebody who's lived through them. Okay? You remember Woodstock as a city northwest of Chicago, Snoopy's bird friend, or a huge outdoor rock festival in New York in 69? Well, it's the rock festival, of course. And so it was a pretty awesome event for a lot of people. And who do you think's playing on stage? Students? Jimi Hendrix, of course, yeah, left-handed guitar, right. Excellent. Okay, this one's going to be much harder. The premise of the TV show Queen for a Day was guys exploring their feminine side, commoners swapping places with royalty, or prizes given to the contestant with the most tear-jerking life story. It's the tear-jerking life story. So there were three contestants that got up there, and each one of them tried to outdo the other by having a more sad story about their lives and things that happened to them. And the audience or somebody voted, and the winner got, you know, a crown, and they wore this gown and stuff and got all sorts of prizes. It's really sort of funny. Okay. Okay, here's the good one. What does fill her up with Ethel mean? Students. And not a clue. Not a clue. Wow. Well, it's gasoline. Ethyl was, premium gasoline. That's what it was called back then. And so you had, you know, your regular. That, of course, was all leaded back then. And you had your ethyl, which was premium. You paid a few, well, maybe even just a penny or two more because gas was so cheap back then. That's one of the questions on the survey. Okay, complete this ad. You wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with. Students? Anybody? You're not a student. Okay. It's Pepsodent. And you can see from this black and white ad, so you can see the yellow on there. It says yellow, just to make sure you knew what it was. 1956.
Wow.
Okay. Complete this ad. You can tell it's Mattel. It's blank. Students. Not a clue. You can tell it's Mattel. It's swell. That was the word that everybody used back then, swell. What beer is brewed in a land of sky blue waters? They sponsored all the Cubs and Sox games in Chicago. And had there was a bear that was associated with it. Students? Adults? Old folks? Hams beer, right. Hams, brewed in a land of sky blue waters. Okay. Oh, who wore a two-way wrist radio and later a two-way wrist TV? Students. He was a detective. He had a yellow hat and yellow raincoat. Okay, who is this?
Tracy.
So here's the two-way wrist radio and here's the two-way wrist TV. And it has the magenta screen of death on the two-way wrist TV. So, and how many people have ever seen anybody wear a yellow hat like that? It's funny. Okay, some TV shows. What was the princess's name on Howdy Doody? Nobody will ever get this. Princess Summer, Fall, Winter, Spring, of course. Okay, I remember her. And the clown's name? Clarabelle. Who said that? Oh, not a student. Okay. There's Clarabelle. Who was the oldest Mouseketeer in Mickey Mouse Club? Watched it all the time. Yes, it was Roy. Okay, this is even more trivial. What puppet was from Chicago was the king of the United States? I know nobody get this. Garfield Goose, there he is. And Fraser Thomas. I watch this every day after school. What product advertised
any
a little...
What questions do we have?
No, just a couple more.
All right.
A little dab will do ya. I just got so involved in doing this.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun for me.
Carried away a little.
Okay. It was Bro Cream. Okay. Okay, that's it. See? So on Tuesday, we'll have a talk on rehab robotics by a new faculty person, Professor Allison Okamura, and this guy here. And but today we're going to have a talk about service learning from Hillary Douglas, and we'll have her on right after a little break. Thank you. Be sure to fill out the forms and sign in if you haven't. Thank you. Oh, you're the one that took that.
I'm just a guest.
Okay, well, if you want to get future announcements, then put your name and email address on it.
Yeah.
Hi. Doing good?
Sherry. Sherry and my colleague,
Hillary.
Oh, hi. Volunteer for you. So we had to meet Hillary.
Okay,
we presented a lot of good ideas a couple weeks ago. Gerardo, should anybody pick any?
No.
Okay.
Sorry. That happens, and it was only like 5 or 6 teams.
Thank you, though.
Okay, well, don't worry about it. You know, there's opportunities next quarter, and during the summer, so don't get disappointed.
No, I'm I also wanted to say hi to Nicole.
Oh, I'm going to do this.
Just ask questions for which they don't know the answers.
Okay.
That makes them feel very uncomfortable.
Okay.
I know it's appealing to the older folks, but you can turn on, you can destroy your evaluation.
Okay.
Just a hint.
Okay. Great. So,
All right. How's everybody doing today?
Wait, I got
to finish. Oh, sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Hillary is a member of the Engage Scholarship Team at the Haas Center for Public Service. She divides her time between managing components of the service learning program and working to build and enhance community partnerships. Hillary has a strong background of working with volunteers and students in particular. Most recently, Hillary was the volunteer coordinator at Project Open Hand, an organization that utilizes over 100 volunteers a day to provide groceries and meals to San Franciscans living with critical illnesses. Prior to her return to the Bay Area, she served 2 years as the AmeriCorps VISTA for the Massachusetts Campus Compact. She was at Endicott College, where she helped to create and run all programming in their emerging community service office. She received her BA from the University of California at Los Angeles. So let's welcome Hillary Douglas.
I am not an engineer, first of all, so I'm going to try to relate to you from a service standpoint. And try to understand you from an engineering and a community partner standpoint. How many folks here are students? And community partners and community members? All right, great, welcome. We're gonna talk today about service learning specifically. So this is considered a service learning class. So of the students, how many are working on projects? All right, fantastic. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about how we relate the service that you're doing with the learning that you're doing in the classroom and sort of best practices for making that successful and for those partnerships to be successful. Has anybody of the students or even the community partners done any work with the Haas Center for Public Service? Has anybody done any of the trainings? A couple. So a couple of the activities that we are going to do you might recognize. We use the same ones over and over. I've used them in all of my different jobs, so we'll head through that. Our goals for today, like I said, we're going to explore the principles of ethical and effective service. We're going to figure out how to apply these to your projects or to really any service that you might be doing. And we're going to explore sort of the relationship between what you would call an engineering analysis and what I would call in service reflection. And I know that reflection can scare people a lot of times, but we're going to talk about it in a way that hopefully will not. So talking about what your personal idea of service is, what are our motives for doing service? Should we be doing service? Is service a good thing to be doing? What exactly is service learning? Analysis and reflection, and again, the principles of ethical and effective service. So we're going to get started with an activity. It's a little small up here. I think I have enough handouts for everyone, so I'm just going to pass these around. This is an activity that we call How Do You Define Service? So what we're going to have you do is read through the different options, and I'll read them through as well. And you're going to rank what is the most service to you, what is the least service to you. So number one is the thing that is the most possible service that could be done, and then all the way down to 17, which would not be service at all. So we're going to take a few minutes to do this. I'll read through them fast. Number one is responding to local science and technology reporters' request to be interviewed for a tech article, doing research that is directly related to critical health concern like AIDS or a critical environmental problem like global warming, using your skills to help a local nonprofit such as a civil engineering a student or professor working with Habitat for Humanity on weekends, give a Mr. Wizard science show presentation at your local elementary school every year, help a science and technology museum design and exhibit for your area of expertise. Write a science/engineering book for the lay public in your area of expertise. Create research internships for high school students in your laboratory. Tutor for Chem 31 or Math 51. vote on a ballot measure to continue paratransit services for people unable to independently use public transit, write a letter to a congressional leader about an issue related to science or technology, take time off of your studies, research, or scientific career to become a technology advisor to a government official, be a mentor in a weekly robotics club for kids, serve as a science advisor to a curriculum developer who is writing elementary or high school science curriculum, donate $50 to, I think I actually changed it on your sheets, but to National Institute on Disability and Rehabilitation Research, partner with an elementary or high school teacher by visiting the classroom once a week, use your coursework to help a local community, like using your classwork on water quality to sample local water supplies and provide data to the city government, or reading the weekly science section in the newspaper. So take a few minutes, go through, put down what your number one is, the most service that you could do, and then all the way on down to number 17, the one that is the least service in your mind. Another minute or two. It looks like most people are done writing. What did you guys choose for number one?
Write a letter to a congressional leader.
Write a letter to a congressional leader. Did anybody else choose that for number one? No? Why did you choose that for number one?
Well, because assuming that it would actually get read, which I know is a big assumption, but that it might actually have a broader influence than I can have just as an individual doing some of the other items on group.
Fantastic. What else did you guys put for number one? Yeah.
Do research that's directly related to a critical health concern.
All right. Did anybody else put that for number one? A couple people? Why did you guys choose that?
For very similar reasons. Just because if you do research, it'll affect a lot of different decisions and stakeholders, such as policymakers, and you're able to make a really big impact.
Sure. And somebody else who put that, did they have a different reason for choosing that? Yeah.
Just the only thing I can do.
Fair enough. Yeah. Full-time. So choosing it as a career, maybe making it a way of life. What else did you put for number one? Or in your top three, say? Yep.
Being a mentor
for the one for kids. Why did you choose that? Did anyone else put tutoring kids? What are some of the reasons that you guys chose that?
I have some reason. I feel like it could be an effect for them. I use my skills that I've learned here to help them out.
It's what I do, so I want to feel like I'm doing the right thing. Well, I'm trying to help kids get into engineering, and this is a way to get them started.
Excellent. How about over here? The time, sure.
The idea of time, I'm assuming I would be working in something else and earning money. That would be the most that I do with the largest impact in my world.
So even though you have a full-time job in a different way, this is still something that you would be able to do sort of on a weekly basis or whatever? Yeah. Did anybody put anything different in their top three? What are some other things you guys thought? Yeah. Did anybody else put that? Yeah?
Yeah. I feel like when you're creating things in your lab for high school students, you know that you're not really going to get that much out of it, but you know that they're going to get a lot out of it. So.
Sure. Are there any others in your top three? Yeah? Oh, nice. Yeah.
It's really directly with your community, which is around you. So.
Any others? Yeah.
Use your skills to help and build on that profit, which is a sort of project.
Yep. Why did you choose that? Has anybody heard something that they put in their bottom three in someone else's top three? Yeah.
I put write a letter to a congressional leader as one of my bottom three just because I feel like they don't
need to hear it. Sure. Did anybody else hear something from their bottom three that was mentioned in the top three? No? What did you guys put for your bottom three? Yeah. How many people put reading the weekly science section in the newspaper? Yeah. Why did you guys put that all the way at the bottom? Anybody have any other thoughts?
It's the only one you can do what you can put.
So it can't be service then. That was fantastic. I'm going to use that. What else did people put in their bottom three? Yep.
Tutor for Chem 31 or Math 31.
All right, why did you put that? In the back, yeah? They're paid. So you would get paid to tutor Math 51 or Chem 31, but you wouldn't get paid to tutor at an elementary school? Did anybody else put that? Philanthropy down in the bottom three? Yeah, why'd you guys put that at the bottom? Sure, philanthropy, you can do it sitting at home, you write a check real fast, you hand $5 into a bucket, it's not really taking any of your time, maybe. What else did you guys have in your bottom three? Yep.
They're responsive to all the science technology reporters for us.
Why?
That's probably also what we do with the
toilet. If I call you for an interview, please don't be on the toilet. Besides the letter to a congressman, did anybody hear something from their top three that was in someone else's bottom three? No. So for the most part, reading the weekly science section of the newspaper is not service, and tutoring, not for college students, not so service either. So what defines service to you then? Is it the amount of time that goes into it?
I feel like for me, it's kind of the intention that goes into it. Kind of what everyone was talking about, philanthropy. If your intention is just to make yourself feel better and kind of alleviate your own guilt, I don't think that's really service. But if your intention, like, for example, like giving someone a research like opportunity or to help like volunteer at a local youth shelter, like if your intention is to really make an impact on someone else's life.
But do you get a little something out of it as well?
Yeah, I think like ultimately you're going to get something. Like I don't think anyone has like purely altruistic like intentions, but it also there's like varying degrees of that too, I think.
All right.
If it's all self interest versus like
what else defines service for you guys? She said a lot of the time that it takes, maybe the number of people that are affected. People wanted to make a mass impact, right? If you can get to your congressman, you can make a large impact. If you're planning out, you know, a curriculum, you can get to a number of people. Maybe the amount of sacrifice, like what it takes for you. Are you going to dedicate your life to something, or are you going to do it a passing, one-time, one-off sort of deal? You know, who benefits, who gets served? Those are all things to think about. We heard it's hard to do something purely altruistic, and there's a large debate on whether something purely altruistic even exists, if you're getting something out of it. Yeah. For sure. What motivates you guys to do service? Like for those of you doing projects, maybe why were you interested in that? Why were you interested in taking this class? Why do you volunteer with Kiwanis? Yeah. So maybe as long as there's some sort of connection, an emotional connection with another person. Yeah. Why else do you guys do service? Has everybody done service at some point? Yeah? Probably to get into Stanford, you had to do some sort of service. What drove you to do that?
I
You can say build your resume if you want. Yeah, go ahead.
I was in the Honor Society in junior high and high school, and as part of that, you had to do a certain amount of community service every year.
Yep, so it was required. Did anybody else have to do required service? Yeah. You have to do it a lot of times now to even graduate high school. So we have all different kinds of motives for our service. Do the motives matter, though? Does it matter that it makes us feel good? Like, should we still be doing it? We're going to do one more activity. Okay. So you are about to approach a cliff. And you're walking along the beach, and you see this cliff, and at the bottom, there are all these people that are hurt and injured. While at the top, you can see a bunch of people that are about to fall. And you have one option. You have two options. You can either go to the bottom of the cliff and help the people that have already fallen and do your best for them, or you can go to the top of the cliff and try to stop them from falling. So think about it for a second. Are you going to run to the bottom of the cliff, help the people that are in dire straits at the bottom, or are you going to run up the hill and see if you can stop additional people from falling? How many people would go to the top of the cliff? And how many people would go to the bottom? All right. You could get to the top, no problem.
No.
Oh, cliff. Oh, yeah. Cool.
All
right. The people at the bottom are definitely injured and definitely in pain and potentially on their way to being seriously in trouble. So for those of you that would go to the bottom, why would you go to the bottom? Yeah.
What if there are a lot of people on the bottom and relatively few still left at the top? Would that affect the decision?
It usually does.
So, but I don't know which way people would, if they would change their mind, know which choice they'd have.
What are some other reasons you might go to the bottom of the cliff? As they come down, you'll take care of them once they hit bottom. Any other reasons? Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Talking about skills, how many people would go to the top? Because one of those reasons might be, I don't have the skills to help the people at the bottom. So if you're going to go to the top, why are you going to the top? Yeah?
So it's more of a preventative measure. You kind of think, they have their whole life in front of them, and here they get punched to their death. And I mean, the people at the bottom, you want to help, but it's like they've already done it, and it's a lot harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two reasons. One is to prevent further injury, figuring that the people at the bottom have a less urgent problem.
Yeah, for sure. Save somebody and then send them down. Try to make some sort of parachute that they can bounce off of in the middle. There's a bunch of different reasons for going to the bottom of the cliff and going to the top of the cliff. And I'm pretty sure that we could all agree that you need both, right? We need people that are going to take care of the injured as well as we need to stop them from falling. And it really, for some people, it really depends on where your skills lie. A lot of times people will talk about the bottom of that cliff when you help people out. That's charity down there. You're going to rush over and put on the Band-Aid. Whereas if you go to the top, it's much more like writing a letter to your congressman and trying to stop the systemic issue of people falling off cliffs. So, are you addressing the people in need, or are you addressing the root cause? One of the things with, you know, a class perhaps like engineering class or any sort of class at Stanford, which is a real research institution, most people are going to choose to go to the top, right? They're going to figure out what the problems are and try to stop them from going on. But there's help needed either way. So it's good to think about both of those sides of it. What constitutes good service for you guys? Yeah.
You put your heart into it. You don't just do it.
Yep.
Yes, I'm required to do this, but I'm not going to do it. I'm actually going to think about what I'm doing.
Think about what you're doing. Be invested in what you're doing. Yeah.
Service that best matches skills with need.
Skills with need. Any others? What makes good service? Yeah. So why should we be doing service in engineering?
Well, there would be very little point to engineering if you don't do some kind of service. So I feel like the whole reason engineering exists is because you want to either build something or create something that will provide some kind of function, some mechanism.
So with that, is there an obligation to do service then? Anyone else? Thoughts on why you should do service in engineering? Yep.
So your community is part of what brought you to the point of being able to get an engineering degree in Native America. Typically, the communities help to raise who you are and create who you are, and so you should get access to skills to develop your engineering essential ability.
Do you think as educators, we can better train you as engineers at the same time that you're doing service? Actually doing something that's sort of applicable, hands-on in the community. So what does the service in this class mean to you guys? For those of you that are doing it, yeah. Any others? Yep.
Me?
Yeah.
I think it's really, in this class, you really need to tailor your solution to who you're serving. A lot of times, when you do service, it's kind of a best fit. It doesn't always work because you're serving a lot of people at once. It's kind of like a one solution fits all. But in this class, you're working with the people you're trying to build something for, and you're actually going to make it work for them.
Fantastic. Building that relationship. We talked a lot about that already, yeah. All right, so a little bit about what service learning is. Service learning is really about preparation to do the service and reflection during the service and after the service. Making sure that, you know, what you're doing with your coursework is tied to the service that you're doing with the community, and also really building up a partnership. It comes down to, your community-identified needs. So not just, hey, East Palo Alto has low graduation rates in high school, I'm going to go and tutor in East Palo Alto. Well, did East Palo Alto come here and ask you for tutors? Do they need tutors? Do 30 other tutoring programs already exist. We want to be thoughtful about our service, and that's one of the really important things about service learning. So you're in a great position already, right? You had that community identified need. Somebody came here and said, you know, what would really be beneficial to me is the completion of this project. So really involving the community in your service. A lot of times as universities, there is seen an obligation to give back to the community, and sometimes from the university standpoint, we'll fly right in and say, we are Stanford, and we are here to save you, right? But But if that's not what the community needs, that's not really going to help anybody out. So we're really trying to find that balance between the service and learning. We're trying to make sure that we're really focusing on our partners and placing an emphasis on their community concerns. We're also sort of blurring the lines between faculty and partner and teacher and learner, because we can all learn from each other. When the community partners come to you, they're not coming from a point of knowing nothing. We're not an expert that's flying in and saying, here, this is for you. We're going to work with them. They have a lot of assets to bring to the table, and service learning is about sort of combining all of those things together. The reflection piece I talked a little bit about, too, really making sure that things are working along the way and taking the time to think about what we're doing and what it means sort of in the larger picture. Making sure that you know what the community partner brings to the table, making sure you know what you bring to the table, making sure that you know what being in this class and at this institution bring as well. Does anybody have any questions on service learning or the definitions of service learning? No? Okay. So from what I understand, this is sort of the engineering design process, identifying a project, putting together the specifications, getting a conceptual design, a detailed design, production, service and maintenance, analysis, and redesign. Would you guys agree that that's sort of the process that you're going to go through? Is there anything that you want to add, things that you want to take away? I have no ideas. I took this from somebody else, so if this is wrong, you just let me know. Okay, so a lot of this we can relate right back in with our service learning. So like I said, identifying the community needs, finding out what their assets are. How many people have been talking to their community partners already? How often are you communicating with them? Is it sort of throughout the process, just at the beginning? Talk to them once, talk to them twice. So make sure that when you're talking to them, that you're treating them like a viable part of the process, and make sure you're including them in the process. You'll benefit a lot more by working with them, and keep them involved all along the way. In analysis, I said it comes down the same as reflection in service learning. What happens when you're doing your analysis at the end? Find out if it worked, if it didn't work, things that you could change, right? The same is true in service learning. We're always going to be asking, like, how is this going? What are we learning? How is this affecting us? How is this affecting the partner? Is it good? Is what we're doing worthwhile? Are we giving them something that's viable, something that they can use? Something that's going to be beneficial, right? So making sure you're thinking about those things all along the way. This is a personal experience. I know sometimes we, especially when we're involved in projects that maybe we're working on in labs or on our own in our rooms or in our offices, we forget that it's a personal experience, but this is really about working for the community, with the community, yeah? All right. So lastly, I'm going to go over some of the principles of ethical and effective service. These are Haas Center favorites, and we'll go over them. And there's a little activity in here as well. And hopefully these will help you guys along your way. Uh, So I'm going to talk through them really fast and then give you guys sort of a second to think about some of the reflection questions. You know, in terms of what makes good service, reciprocity through partnership, humility. You guys are wicked smart. Everybody did awesome things to get in here. But you need to remember that you don't know everything and that there, you know, there's going to be a lot that can that you can learn as well. Respect for diversity, a commitment to the project. So it doesn't really help anybody if somewhere along the way you commit to helping doing this particular project and then you know, you might get busy, midterms happen. 10 weeks is pretty short for a whole project to get done. But remember that you are, you know, you're making the commitment to get it done. Ongoing communication and clear expectations. Preparation, context, pedagogy is a big one, and safety as well. So if you guys could just take a second and then roll through this and look at some of the reflection questions. You know, what does reciprocity look like between you and your community partner? Think about what that means for you guys. Are you evaluating their interests, their needs? How are you going to prepare yourself to be humble and respectful in service experiences? How do you and your team explore and respect the diversity among your partners? Are there any diversity-related issues in your service that you need to address? So take a second and think about some of those things, and then let me know what your thoughts are. So if you guys want to have a read-through, maybe jot down some ideas real fast. I'll give you a couple of minutes. Does anything in here stand out to anybody? Anything else stand out to anybody? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure. So making sure you know your community partner, making sure that you know what their needs are. Does anything else on here stand out to you guys? Yeah. Having it built in. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, I was going to say clear expectations and the ongoing communication. And I realized that it sounds really obvious, but like the clear expectations especially is really interesting because a lot of times maybe your user expects you to develop a certain product or a certain function, but you think you're like you kind of take what they tell you and kind of wrap it around your own idea. And then there's that mismatch of communication, and then your product doesn't actually help anyone. So I think that's really important.
Anybody have any other thoughts? Is everybody abiding by all of the principles for ethical and effective service? Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks so much. I think that that's a great start for you guys for your projects. If you have any questions at all about service learning or communicating with your partners or anything like that that you might need from the us in the Haas Center, just definitely let us know. We're totally there, available for you. And thanks so much for giving me your time today.
Hillary, thank you so much.
Thanks for coming.